This episode of the Crossing Gate podcast is brought to you by The Helix. Do you want a layout with more track, more wiring, more maintenance, more problems? Then you need a Helix. Yes, the Helix can move your layout from great straight to annoying. You get a second level. You can get a third level. You can get a fourth level. And with the price of wood, you can get a second mortgage. If you want 300 feet of flex track that no one will see, add a Helix. Make sure you don't follow any advice when building your Helix. You won't need it. Use 18-inch radius. Make it double track without enough clearance between the track centers. Make the clearance between levels at the bare minimum. Who needs auto racks? Or double stacks? Or high cube boxcars? Or anything built after 1955? Make sure you cover the outside of the Helix. That way your operators will never know when the train will reach the end. And they can keep turning the power knob faster and faster and faster until they have turned the 515 local into a Japanese bullet train. Yes, the Helix is for layout owners who want more and have no friends to stop them from building it. So start your Helix today, and you'll be running trains up into the dining room and the attic in no time. Helix should not be associated with the Duck Under. Duck Under is sold separately and requires hard hat and medical insurance that covers knee replacements.
I would argue that once you build a layout or try to build a layout, you look at other layouts differently as well.
I use the term prototypically fictitious.
A layout has to have a life beyond construction.
One of my axioms is every layout is a compromise.
Let me tell you the ways.
Dave's done them all.
Yeah, I've done them all.
If what you're doing isn't making you happy, stop doing that and do something different.
Right. That's why I gave up golf.
There's more than what you found.
You're listening to The Crossing Gate, the official podcast of the Twin Cities Division of the National Model Railroad Association. The topics and discussions are about the world's greatest hobby, model railroading. Here are your hosts, Thomas Gazier and Ken Zeska.
Hi, welcome to another episode of the Crossing Gate podcast. Tonight I'm joined by Joe Binnish.
Good evening.
Greg Dahl.
Hello, hello.
Mike Jordan.
Hello.
David Hamilton.
Hello.
Ken Zeska.
Good evening, friends.
Dan Dosa.
Hey, all.
And I'm Thomas Gazier. And our topic tonight is going to be layout planning, designing for operation. And maybe I'm going to hand this over to you, Dan. Maybe you can talk about what we want to discuss tonight on those points for that.
Thank you, Tom. You and I kicked around this idea a bit. The idea of a modeler who has built layouts before, they have skills, they have experience in layout construction, they know how to wire, they know how to set up a DCC system or a DC system that's reliable. They've got all those pieces, but they're looking to find the next level of their modeling. In other words, they've reached a point with building a layout that's not operationally focused, that doesn't really do what they're looking for it to do. And a lot of times we see people that their response to building the next layout is to build a variant, hopefully for them, a larger variant of the same thing. And so the idea with this podcast was about, let's shake it up. Let's get out of that level of thinking and start thinking about, if you were to design a layout with operation in the forefront, where would that take you in your planning?
So where would that planning take you? So I'll go to you, Joe. What would you say to someone who's tired of the roundy round and says, I want something more?
Thank you. Well, besides the obvious of get out and get some experience and operate, and I realize there are people out there who don't live close to someone, so they can't see an operating layout. You know, there's a lot available, obviously, on the internet to look at operations. There's a lot available. Kalmbach has a lot of books and you know, the magazines, Model Railroad Planning, that kind of stuff are good resources. But I think that you need to look at what is it about a railroading that you like. And everybody likes to see the cute car going through the really nice scenery and all that kind of thing. But as that play value runs off, to me, the next step is to say, what can I model that looks like the real thing or functions like the real thing? So then it's a lot of research, trying to figure out what you like and how it worked in the real world. Dave Hamilton has this CB&Q railroad that we operated this morning, as group in from California. And I was the yard master in La Crosse, and it was really great because I had these trains come in. They had certain functions, and we got to do the city jobs to do the local switching. So, Dave, tell me about how you generated that concept for your railroad.
I guess research was one of the key words. I knew that I liked the area along the Mississippi, like I've said before. I knew the railroad was going to run from point A to point B, in this case, East Dubuque, Illinois, to La Crosse, Wisconsin. When I did the La Crosse area, I made a few trips down there, and I knew that some of the bigger things going on in La Crosse was like the Heilemann Brewery. I knew there was a canning or a can manufacturing plant. I knew there was another brewery on the other side of town. There was a cold storage warehouse and a big old factory that made boots, you know, and rubber coated items, and another outfit that made air conditioning equipment, train, no pun intended there. But at some point I just did enough reading, so I knew what I wanted to see in La Crosse, and I did it. You know, I kind of centered it on the brewery, but I knew that that wasn't going to be enough. So I kept finding more and more photos and found some of the other industries in La Crosse and just tried to make them. I knew there were no coal mines in La Crosse and there were no ore pits in La Crosse. So that never had to, no offense, so that never had to even factor into the equation. So I just worked with what I knew was there and did it. Part of it being era specific, I knew that I could focus more on the stuff in La Crosse in the 60s and the 70s. And obviously it's a little bit different today because some of those places don't exist anymore. It was research, historical society, photos and maps, aerial photos that I found in some of the magazines and, you know, on the internet. In my case, the Milwaukee Road had all kinds of neat, you know, aerial photos that they've published, you know, over the years, like aerial surveys. And even though mine's a Burlington Railroad, there's enough mix up with the Milwaukee that it was easy enough to see what I wanted to see in the Milwaukee Road pictures. So
do you think that your research, like you said, there's no old pit or pinnacle. Part of that is discipline. Don't you feel that?
Yeah.
The research makes you, you know, bring the operation because you're disciplined and not going all, you're not putting a logging operation and a Pulpsburg, the window factory, and things that aren't there.
They should, well, you know, and that's where you can maybe start splitting hairs because naturally somebody will say, it's my railroad and I want a coal mine next to the palm tree factory. Well, okay, we'll do what you need to do, but, you know, that doesn't make sense at some point. So, you know, that's why you might like something, but it wasn't there. It wasn't in the area that you're trying to make an example of. You have to have some discipline.
Yeah.
You know, you just can't. The circus didn't come to town every day, so there's no sense in unloading elephants, you know, if it's only there like every 7 years. So why not spend a little bit of time and see if there were a few oil dealers, or also in my case, were there any grain elevators, my favorite? You know, I mean, it just makes sense that it's so easy to do the research now between the various magazines and historical societies and all the, you know, railroad picture archives and whatnot. You know, it's, I don't think there's a lot of excuses for not trying to justify certain things and do certain things the way that makes sense.
Right.
So,
you know, I like that. And then,
really important points.
What was that, Dan? Okay.
Listen, Dave hit on a couple of really important points that are implied in what he said. The first being, you're using elements of the prototype either in terms of the physical structure of the layout of the railroad or prototype practices to define the parameters of a layout. And I think that that focus really shifts from, I have this much space, I need a track plan, to this is what I'm trying to model. What do I put in there to represent that as accurately as I can? Which is a whole different mindset. So, you know, we're sort of doing a shift in our paradigm here, how we think about planning our layouts. And I know for me, that was, you know, on my current layout, that was enormous. You know, I was thinking about this entirely differently than I ever had before. I was thinking about it in terms of representing the prototype and designing it for realistic operation.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we'll go to Greg Dahl here because you took this to an all another level. You have ample space, but you stayed true to this idea of large industries in your automobile plant, taking up half, if not more, of your layout, where other people might have put 5, 10, even 20 industries or two cities in there. So did that help you with your operations then, Greg, or how has that affected how you've gone forward at this point?
That's a good point. Thanks. I think a little bit what we've got, though, is a little bit of the cart before the horse here. I mean, we're talking about industries and stuff like that. I think there's a difference between track planning and layout design. And if we're talking about layout design, you're talking about how many people do I want in my basement to operate? You know, how often do I plan to operate? What size aisles am I going to put up with? And so for me, you know, Tom was right. I have ample space, and my first track plan was two giant yards, you know, three peninsulas. Realized that it was going to take me 12 operators to operate. And no offense, guys, but I didn't want 12 people in my basement. Once I figured that out, once I figured out the number of people I wanted, then it became easy because, yes, I've got a 28-foot wall that's dedicated to the auto plant, and one guy operates that area. So I don't have four people jammed in a 28-foot space, four-foot aisle over there. That made things a lot easier. But I think the key is you got to look at yourself. You look in the mirror. What do you want? Just because everybody else is modeling the Great Northern in your town doesn't mean you need to model the Great Northern. What is it that you want to model? What do you like switching, you know, mainline freights? Do you like timetable and train order? Figure that out first. And then you can start working on your track plan.
You know, Greg, your layout also has one other thing that I think is important. It has a level of restraint. And Dave talked about this too. There's a restraint in what you're doing. You essentially have a layout that has two major industries, the auto plant and a brewery. You have other industries, but these are the big players on your line. And I think that what doing that does is it keeps your story coherent and consistent. You're not trying to put everything into your layout just because you have a lot of space. You know, this is a concept that I find people getting stuck with is, well, I have to have passenger operation. Where's the passenger terminal going to be? Where's the engine house going to be? You know, I'm kind of a mindset to say, does that fit within your space? Does that add to your operational concept? Or is that something that's superfluous? And challenging ourselves to really look at those things, for lack of a better term, almost a minimalist approach of getting the essentials down and getting them down well. And the rest, letting it go. Nobody hears layout is going to suffer because they don't have a gazebo. I really think about a continuum between Wonderland layout in Germany. You know, I'm sure is very cool as a display. You know, it's a little miniature world and that's got to be really cool to saying, but that's not what will make me happy. Having the fireman getting the cat out of the tree, that's not going to make my layout any better. And it's not going to make it any more satisfying to me. But being able to say, you know, as my layout is approaching completion, what I've got is a microcosm of a transportation system in which people can operate and I can watch this layout come alive. And that allows the layout to have a life beyond just its construction, bringing people down in the basement, turning it on, watching the trains run around, people going ooh and ah, and then going back upstairs for pie and coffee.
I agree. And I like that, you know, don't dilute your ideas. And I'll go to Mike Jordan because not only have you not diluted the perishable industries, but you've focused on it to get all the nuances and not the nuisance. But how did you feel, Mike, from turning your layout into just a regular layout to something that just totally embodies the movement of perishable products from California.
It didn't happen overnight. It was an evolution. My layout room is 12 by 20, and I can't go from Chicago to Los Angeles on the Santa Fe in a room that size. You know, I chose a branch line on the urging of a fellow model railroader. Once you kind of focus on an area branch line and you do just a little research on the branch line, you find out what they shipped, and then you can start designing your railroad around the branch line. I use the term prototypically fictitious. I use the branch line, the Santa Maria Valley, as a start point to lay out my railroad. Well, all of a sudden, I realized they shipped an awful lot of refrigerator cars, and then that research slowly oozes into the railroad, and it was great to find refrigerator cars and do that research because it defines the railroad. The rest of the railroad in operation is supporting that operation. With a smaller room, a smaller layout, this is a great way to entertain your guests. And that's kind of the basis of my operation. My introduction to operation, that's another story. But once you get into that weird group of operators, model railroading really opens up because it is never a dead end. It just continues on. If I see someone that is interested in operations, I try to introduce them to as many layouts and different methods as I can.
I like it. And we also brought up, Dan and I, and a few of them, we call it the Rule One Modelers, which is fine. It's my road. I can do what I want. And I think there's always room for them. And I'm going to go to you, Larry, and welcome Larry Eggering to the show. Say hi, Larry. Join us.
Hi, Larry.
Hey, Larry.
Hi, Larry.
Hey, Larry. So you kind of embody a portion of that. Hey, it's my layout. I'm going to model this crazy factory. But you had to have operations because it would just, you know, once you built, like Dan says, a layout has to have a life beyond construction. And you've done that with the operations, even with, you know, like you and I and a few other with our fictitious layouts. How would you pass on that wisdom to somebody as a Rule One modeler? Why don't you also try this?
You have to watch what they do. I have a friend that simply loves to watch trains run in circles, and that's all he wants to do. Every now and then he'll set a boxcar out, but there's no order to it. I feel like putting that car there. That's his Rule One. But when you see the person that comes in and says, okay, everything here is funny, but it's serious because, you know, that tank car has to go from here to here and it has a purpose. And that boxcar has to go from here to here and it has a purpose. As you bring those purposes in, you can watch the lights come on in their eyes, conveying that over and saying John Allen was the Gibbons and Druthers guys. You have to give them a list of Gibbons and Druthers. Do you want primarily a switching layout? Do you want a layout with a purpose, or do you want it to run in a circle? So once you determine that, then you can bring them into the aspect of the layout they want to build. And I agree with everything that's said. You get them on operating layouts if that's what they want to see, so that they can say, you know what, this works for me. Doesn't make it right or wrong. It makes it work for them, which makes it right. So there is really no wrong. If it works for them, it's right. If they want it to be uber prototype, let's say they're worried about the North Shore line somewhere. Let's say North Shore lines in Buffalo, New York. Then you get them headed into the New York Central Historical Society, and you pass them down that road and say, okay, so here's how they did it in 1958. And with Facebook, look at everything that was for prototype operation too, because we have guys that actually ran it, similar to you, Tom. They were behind the throttles. That's how I do it. You have to figure out where their interest is, and then you bring them to the group that has the knowledge base for that. I don't have all that knowledge base. I have a fun layout. It's all goofball stuff, but I know enough about the prototype, how things work, that I can give them good, solid operations. I hope I answered the question well.
Yeah, no, I agree with that, that you can bring operations to even your fanciful ideas, you know, of, you know, like Joe and I, and you do this. And Ken, I'm going to go to Ken next, where we talked about operationally focused and your layout kind of has a purpose. What about passenger operations? You know, Dan brought up, build a layout, and then everybody goes, well, where's the passenger station? Well, what if you don't have one? But if you're going to do passenger operations, what would you tell them, Ken?
My thought is, and I have operated on very nice passenger-oriented layouts. If you want to do that, that's great, but then focus on it, because there is really such intricacy that you can put into passenger operations. It'd be a lot of fun. But don't then try to do the St. Paul Union Depot and then Dayton's Bluff Yards at the same time, because you're going to step all over yourself and not do justice to either one. It goes back to the thought of focusing on what it is you really want to do. And be honest with yourself. If you like passenger operations, go with it and enjoy it and do it the best you can. And don't worry about your friends that like to switch. If I go over and there's not enough 40-foot boxcars to switch around, I'm not going to be disappointed. I'm still going to want to cut in and out the mail and the baggage and get in back the right train in at the right time and watch the parade of trains coming and going during rush hour. It's got to be true to what you want to do if you're going to have enjoyment with it. But then you were talking about layout design points for operation, and we've been dancing around that. Keep in mind that whatever layout you build, you're going to have to maintain. And whatever operation you conceive, you're going to have to be able to maintain that too. And you're going to have to be able to turn it. Again, do what you want to do. We talked earlier about being true to the story. You're going to run into people out there that say, hand me a throttle and a stack of car cards. I don't care where the cars come from. I don't care where the hell they go. Just let me go out and crash cars and move them down the line. You're going to run into those guys. And if you like that, fine. But if that's not what you like, then build the story that you like and let people, it's your railroad. And they are your guests running on your railroad. If they can't buy into it, that's too bad. You're going to live with that. And that's going to be your layout, your legacy, what you deal with day in and day out. Make sure you do what you really like to do.
Okay. I think that's the main point. If you like what you do, it'll keep your interest going.
Absolutely. You know? And you know, if you want a Great Northern Railroad, okay, fine. Just keep the pigsty blue off of it.
Yes, no pigsty blue. Can't have that. Big Sky Blue. So Dan, I'll bring up Greg said the highlight here, track planning versus layout design. And you and I talked about this earlier, and you brought up a great design idea of to think of spots, not switches. Maybe you can explain that.
One of the things that a lot of people do in layout design, and certainly I've done this enough in the past, is saying, well, I'm thinking about a track plan. I'm basing my model railroad on previous track plans. I think I'll build the Gorian and defeat it, but I'll do it this way. Another way to think about that whole thing is to think about a transportation system, a prototype transportation system, which now opens up the question of how did they do this? Think about the spots. Think about where the cars are going, not how many switches you have. For people who haven't operated, there's nothing like going out and operating on a bunch of different layouts. One of the illuminating things is how little you need to have to fill up the time. One of the things I like on my layout is I can look at my switch list and it'll tell me this job is moving 12 cars. It's moving 14 cars. It's moving 9 cars. Yet when I run the layout and I watch operators run the layout, they're not complaining that they have nothing to do. Thinking about where the cars are going and how would the railroad design this? They don't want to pay for switches. Not if they don't have to. If they can build something that is more efficient, they'd rather move a car around than have an expensive switch to maintain. You know, just thinking in the terms, one of my axioms is every layout is a compromise. We can all look at the compromises we have to make very, very carefully. Sometimes, as people here have said, we have to let go of things we want because they really just don't fit with our concept and our story. And to me, every story is best when it stays true to itself. Each layout tells a story, but no layout needs to tell all stories. Back to Ken's point. I won't pick on him for his lack of loving Big Sky Blue, although I know secretly he does, deep down inside somewhere. But what I will say is, if you love the Great Northern, God love you. Model the Great Northern. But if you've got a 6 by 8 foot room, don't model the Great Northern from Minneapolis out to the West Coast. Look at it and think about what's a piece that I can reasonably model into this space. And I, my example with my Minnesota commercial layout, that the Hiawatha line, really, if you look at what I'm modeling, it's just a little more than a two city blocks, because that's where my action is. Is there more to that line? Yes. And it's still a very small line in reality. But by doing that, we can focus in. And I like the concept of when you have a zoom lens on a camera and you're moving the lens in and out. By moving in, really focusing on areas, you can do a tremendous amount to make a really interesting operating model railroad.
Yeah, well, I agree with that. We'll go back to Greg. You talked about layout design versus track planning. And Dan talked about filling up time. Greg, when you said like how many operators do you want and you kind of design for that, can you design in a time limit? You know, some people say our op sessions are 3 hours or 2 hours. Do you feel that you could design for that?
I think you can, because I have. One of my biggest concerns when I was trying to figure out my layout was I knew that I'm a slow worker. So I knew I wasn't going to build a double deck layout that was going to have all this extra space, because I just am not going to get it done. But one of my concerns was, if people are going to come over, they're going to want to operate for more than 20 minutes. I mean, 20 minutes is fine for me. At the end of a long day, I come downstairs, I can switch out one industry, and that's a lot of fun. It's great. But people aren't going to drive half an hour, operate for half an hour, and then drive half an hour home. That just, you need to figure out. I chose about 2 hours, between 2 and 3. There are people that go with 4 hour sessions. There are people that go with all day sessions. I just can't stand that long anymore. It just doesn't work for me. So,
thank you, Greg.
That was a big concern of mine. If people come over, are they going to be standing around and are they going to be bored? Because, you know, we've talked about, you know, everybody wants, give me a throttle, give me some car cards, let me just go start. You know, nobody wants to come over and be a real railroader. Like, you know, like you, Tom, what's the first thing you do? Well, I get to work and I sit down in the office, you know, and I wait. It's like, okay, everybody, come on over, you know, and wait 40 minutes before we start doing anything.
Yeah, read paperwork. Yeah.
And it's prototypical. I mean, what did you guys expect, right? Yeah. You know, so part of that. So, but you can, I think, you can judge how long a job is going to take. And it does take a lot of tweaking. But as Dan mentioned, you'd be very surprised on how little trackage you need to keep people busy. I would venture to guess that most model railroads have more trackage than they need for the amount of operations that they're really trying to accomplish. For every layout that I've been to where you go, gee, we finished everything, I've been to 50 layouts where everybody goes, well, we didn't get to run, you know, X, Y, and Z. A lot of times we didn't run half the trains we were supposed to run. And yet at the end of the session, I'm like, I'm glad, I'm exhausted.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. So yeah, I think you can plan for time. And another thing we talked about, Mike, I'm going to go to you because you bring this up a lot. If you're going to design your layout for operations, what's the advantage of having mentors and I suppose the new hot influencers? Maybe we're influencers. I don't know about that. Start the Crossing Gate TikTok here. But what is the advantage? Like you said, Gary Friesman ruined the hobby for you. We beg to differ. But what advantage would someone have to go seeking out and finding, you know, a mentor at the NMRA meeting or local club or something like that?
Joining clubs and getting out and operating on other people's railroads really helps in design because, you know, why make the mistake when someone else already has? And my introduction to operation was through a gentleman called Gary Friesman. And I say he ruined model railroading because I used to be a model railroader, and then I learned about operations, and now I call myself an operator. You know, I still model railroads, but with the introduction of operation, it just keeps it fresh and alive. The other thing is it puts you into contact with other railroaders, and you get to go operate on other people's railroads and get to see Great Northern Railroad with sky blue cars. You get to see a Milwaukee railroad. I don't know why anybody would do Milwaukee, but you get to see railroads that have main line running. You get to see railroads that have a short line railroad or just switch out an industry. So you can learn all these things about operation and then figure out which part you like and what do you have room for, and then that lets you make that decision of the size of your railroad. My railroad is a sequence of events. You go from one train to the next. When I start to see people's eyes roll into the back of their head and there's no cookies left, then I turn off the railroad. It usually takes about 2 hours. As we gain in age, I think two and a half hours seems to be the nicest time to run without fatiguing your operator.
I'll just have you know, Joe eats all the cookies, so I don't want to be blamed for that. So
I thought he was the one that picked the sprinkles off my donut.
Yeah.
That made you know, I did not eat all the cookies, however, Tom.
Yeah, yeah. We watched you. So I'll go to David. Those are good points, Mike. I like that, that a mentor Greg brought up too, we'll talk about after, is the OPSIG, if you're trying to find someone locally. Dan and I and everyone else, we talk about what's your story and what's the hook? How do you get people hooked into this? And I think if you want to do an operations, if you have a story, if you have a prototype, you ought to automatically have a story. And maybe that's what you have, Dave. How do you tell the story of that little segment of the Burlington from La Crosse South to Prairie du Chien on to Galesville? Your story has evolved too with other branch lines to Winona and such. But do you feel you're telling your story well, or do you want to do more?
I think I've, you know, attempted to do a fairly good job. And for whatever it's worth, before we moved into this house, the railroad I had went from Galesburg all the way up to Minneapolis. You know, I took off a really big chunk of that same part of the railroad, you know, along the river. And that was when I lived in Arlington Heights, Illinois. So when we moved here to Minnesota, you know, even though I had more space, I decided to pull the railroad boundaries in and basically come up with about a 100-mile section of it. And that's why it ended up being from East Dubuque to La Crosse. And then one thing led to another, and that's when I added those parts within that same space. You know, I added the Milwaukee Road downtown job because, you know, the Burlington and the Milwaukee both pretty much dominated La Crosse. I had another section of the basement that I had used for something else, and I decided that, you know, it really should be railroad, so I added Winona. And that's when I used my, you know, that magical geography bender. But, you know, it really didn't change the boundaries of the railroad that much, and it helped to add to the story because it showed that the Burlington had a branch line into Winona, you know, and they mixed it up there with the CNNW and the Green Bay and Western, et cetera. So I kind of fine-tuned what I had without really expanding it after I compacted it, because I bit off too much before we made a move 30 years ago into a different house. And then I tried with the scenery and the place names to make you feel like you were actually going along the river between La Crosse and East Dubuque. You know, so scenery, location names, type of trains that were running, you know, a few passenger trains, but mostly freight trains going back and forth. And that was it. Get a couple prominent points like Wyalusing State Park or the bluffs around East Dubuque. I think that's doing a good job at telling the story, you know, and especially because I also have photographs of those areas that are here and there down on the railroad. So somebody could, if they're looking at East Dubuque, I can say, here's some pictures I took in East Dubuque. Oh yeah, this looks like East Dubuque. And it's the same thing for, you know, parts of La Crosse and parts of Prairie du Chien and Winona. I think that all helps to connect it together if you have some documentation, but without going crazy, because I didn't necessarily have prototype track plans. Not that there's anything wrong with that, But the whole idea was just to give you the flavor of those areas and what was going on in those areas. And that's what I did. I wish I had a little more room so I could have another interchange or two, you know, at different points on the railroad. But maybe I'll figure out a way to do that at some point, you know. But as it is, the Burlington swaps cars with the Milwaukee and La Crosse. The Burlington swaps cars with the Green Bay and Western and Winona. We have some Illinois Central interchange in East Dubuque. Semi-accurate. It's enough that it makes sense if you're there operating it. Once you get over the initial fear of being there operating it. So guys that come back for a second or third or fourth time without being geography majors, it all starts to make sense to them. This is what really went on there. So this is why I'm doing it the way I'm doing it. Yeah. Look at the picture. Yeah. You can see that that's what it's supposed to be.
Yeah, I think you do. I think your story, your scenery and your scenes and the towns sell that story. That's the hook, you know, along with the equipment and things like that. You don't necessarily need the exact prototype track plan. I don't think any of us would know. If you're modeling New York Central, we're not going to know the track plan. But I'm somewhere along the river in this era, in the late 60s, 70s, and we're running to Burlington.
So right.
I'll jump in, Tom.
Yeah, go ahead, Dan.
No, I mean, I like the concept of your layout sustaining the illusion. It doesn't have to be 100%. Love this example. There's a guy with the University of Minnesota's Model Railroad Club, and he's done fabulous models of two of the industries that I model. They're architectural type models. They're unbelievable. The models I have are not nearly that accurate. But when you look at them, if you've been down in that area, you've looked at that industry, it's got an instant quality of recognition. It's like, oh, I know exactly what that building is. If you see my Nokomis Mill and you've been down on the Hiawatha Avenue, you know it because it looks like the Nokomis Mill. Is it architecturally correct? No, but it sustains the illusion. And I think that for all of us, the more we create a story that allows our operators to become enmeshed in the story, ensconced in the story, just the better everything becomes. And like you said, Dave, having people feel like they're running trains along the river. They're moving between these towns and being able to sustain that kind of illusion. And it doesn't even have to be entirely prototype. Greg, your layout doesn't have a prototype basis. Tom, your layout doesn't. But I look at these and I think, but somehow they operate correctly. They operate like the prototype. And when I'm running those layouts, I'm there. And Tom's, I'm up in northern Minnesota and I'm hauling iron ore. Greg, I'm out in the St. Louis area, running a gritty little industrial short line, and everything about their layouts screams, this is where it is, this is what you're doing. And they haven't diluted that with a bunch of irrelevancies or distractions. They haven't put in a bunch of things that simply distract. Ken raised the thing about passenger operations, and I'll say, if you want to do passenger operations, great. You know, if you're going to do that and you're doing an operating railroad, don't just have a passenger train that every now and then runs around the layout in a circle. Tom and I talked about this with his layout. It's an iron ore industrial railroad. And I said, look, just take that story and own it. You make that story, if you will, and you own that story and with no apologies. That's something that really enhances a layout and its operation. Don't try to do too much, but what you do, just try to do it well.
No, I like that. I like that. And we'll go to Larry. We've been talking about negative space, and I think Greg brought up a good point of like, you don't use all the tracks. How do you get your club members to not put track in every square foot? How do you get the ops versus the runners? How's the tug of war or the arm wrestling go on that in a club?
I'll let you know when we figure it out. Okay, just being brutally honest, we had one guy who drew up the initial track plan. given all the clubs, givens and druthers. In other words, we wanted a passenger station. We wanted a roundhouse and a turntable. The majority wanted it. We wanted to be able to reverse trains, whole trains, somewhere in the middle so that you weren't locked in going one direction. We want adequate crossovers. He drew up the initial plans. Okay, he doesn't listen to this, but his name's Dave. And he's been a dear friend for 25 years. He drew up the initial plans, and yeah, some were knocked down dragouts. Like, he did not like the balloon tracks underneath the helixes. A couple of us, we just got together in a meeting and said, majority rules, who wants it? And everybody said yes. Did it take up any additional space? Nope. It was space that was unused anyway. Those types of things. But we have a pretty good balance of scenery. The one thing that we're really struggling with is what we call the downtown area with the industries in there. A couple of guys were trying to cram an industry every 6 square inches.
That's what I'm trying to think is, like, you see a lot of that in a club.
Yeah.
And it gets diluted, the coal mine next to the atomic plant next to, you know, it's like a module club. And it's just.
Yeah, we, you know, just simply said it has to look real. As a club, what did we set as our gold standard? Our gold standard was we wanted something so real looking that you thought you were there. Does it follow a specific prototype? No, it doesn't. We do have a coal mine, but it's in the corner, you know, and it's a minor feature. The passenger station is on the top level right in front. So that really stands out because it's got all those big structures and buildings, and the same with the downtown areas right behind it where it would be in a big one. Our working yards are in good logical places. So we have room for scenery. We actually have room for expansion if we really wanted to add a few more tracks and industries, we can. But we've balanced it to make it look real. Everybody on here has conveyed that. It's got to look right.
Hey, you know? So $99 question or whatever it is now, has the club ever removed track, like taken an industry out?
We have removed probably 2 boxes worth of track.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And relayed it where it made more sense. And sometimes you find that in the middle of an operating session. You say, you know what? You want me to switch here and here, but I can't get from here to here. You know, those buildings literally have left the building. You know, we take them out and pull the turnouts out and just lay a new section of track in there to make it work. Is it perfect? It's getting there. Our op session this last weekend, we only had 5 operators, me being one. And got to have those, you know, those AP points. No one complained that anything didn't work the way it was supposed to. All the way from the cars and engines, which are gone through a testing process, to the switching and all that. Everything went as good as you could hope for. How long did it take? We actually went a little bit beyond the 2 hours. We were almost to 3 when the last guy got done. But he was having so much fun, he didn't even notice it was 3 hours. He just grabbed that one job that takes forever, and it's in a place we call Portlandia. And you have to switch 4 industries there as well as a car ferry. So it's a big job.
But that's the operator's goal. I think the operators gravitate to the chess match, and right. The other people will grab the scenery train. I want to run the Suncoast Limited or whatever.
Oddly enough, we had a passenger train sitting up there, pre-made. Ready to go. We had its entire script, if you will, laid out on how it was to run. It never moved. The guys all took switching jobs. And
they're drinking your Kool-Aid now.
Yeah, they're drinking my Kool-Aid. Now it's their Kool-Aid, it's not mine. You know, I mean, somebody asked me once, what do you love about model railroading? I said, a throttle in a yard. Build a train and watch some other guy run it around. I'm happy. I like the 3-step ahead thought process on when I'm building that train. You know, what am I doing 3 steps from now
Yes. That
I can do that?
And you said also the yard. Dan and I talked about this, and I'll bring it up a little bit if people remind me of that. An operations-based layout doesn't have to be continuous run. But I want to go to Ken and talk about some of your design points for operations and talk about that a design, if you're designing a layout for operations and then you build it and lay the track, it's not final. And I think, you know, I've got out the putty knife, Mike Jordan has, we've all changed tracks. What are some of the design examples that you would tell, you know, to people, Ken? What are some good points that, hey, I want to design a layout for ops. What are some things to avoid? What are some things I also need?
I have pictures of the hole in the wall, Minneapolis Union Depot area, that spanned 40 years. And one of the things that you'll see if you look at those different pictures is that the track layout continually changed. And I think that's something that you need to be aware of, is that as you dive deeper, as you operate on different places, you're going to all of a sudden say, oh, that's a neat idea that I would like to incorporate into my layout. When you get past the point of simply switching cars because they need to be switched and then start understanding the business of the railroad in the region that you're modeling, you're probably going to make some small changes or some large changes. And that's part of the fun. But that goes back to why you want to find an operational group. And it goes back to, well, like what we're trying to do in the Twin Cities Division. We're trying to get more people involved in operations simply so we can get more people to understand or to just see what we're doing. Hopefully let them learn from our mistakes, enhance the whole hobby. I just operated at Joe Binish's last weekend. So I took a switching job, which I finished. And luckily, because the way the changeover went, the second part of my job was fairly easy. So I got to run a second job. And all of a sudden I went, wow, this is really neat what this job does. And I'd never considered that. So now I can jot those notes down, take them back, and just pin on the wall. I may not change something right now, but it's just food for thought for how I want to enhance my operation. Like it or not, like any other art form, we're going to grow with it. And so we're going to have an opportunity to make changes. And that's part of the fun. That's my thought there.
I think that's good. And Dan, we'll come back to you and your point about, we talked about sacred cows. You know, I'm going to build a layout. I need a depot. I need this. I need the engine facility and the continuous run. So let's talk about the continuous run for operations. You don't really need that, right?
Actually, not in the least. And one of the most interesting things to me was how much more I've enjoyed my layout after I gave up trying to do continuous run. It was just, there are so many things that are just a waste of space. And I, you know, among all of us, I probably have the least amount of space I'm working with. And so every inch matters to me. And I'm not going to waste space on things that aren't going to provide aren't focused on what I'm trying to model. You know, you and I have talked about this concept in psychology called functional fixedness. And what that means is we tend to want to do the same things over and over again. We get a problem, we do the same thing. We try to solve it the same way. You know, one of those is, well, I have to have a continuous run. Well, I have to have a passenger station. You know, I've griped about this before. I was looking at a track plan in Model Railroad, our Model Railroader. It was a copper ore line. It ran from a mine to a smelter. And I thought, well, okay, that's fine. Think of it, you know, it was a 4x8 plant. Think of it as your layout, Tom, in a very small way. And so what do they have? Oh, tucked in one of the corners, a passenger station. And I'm thinking, that really is out of place. It doesn't have to be there. You know, so I like the idea of saying, break out of your own thinking. Start to think outside of the box. Tom saved me when I was trying to design my layout and offered a suggestion that completely altered what I was doing and saved my layout design. And it's really been a huge factor in what I designed. I didn't come up with it on my own. He just made this comment, oh, you know, that would solve everything. So I went with it. Don't get locked into thinking. And by all means, don't get locked into being told by other people what you need to have. Own your story and tell it well. I will offer this caveat on that, which is make it a coherent, believable story. The more you stretch the story, the more you make it unbelievable, the harder it is to sell it. If you've produced a simple, cohesive story, base your layout off of that and go for it. It can be prototype like Dave's. It can be freelance like Greg's. You know, it can be a mix like Joe's. And all of those work as long as you stay cohesive with it.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. I like sticking to the story. I like you said, break out of your own thinking. I also think that people who are drawing up track plans, I would love to see their notebook because I believe they draw page after page of pretty much the same plan. And so going back to changes, and I'll throw this out to Ken, brought this up. You'll change your track plan due to knowledge. Like if you find, oh, the prototype did this, I'm modeling this prototype here, so I'm going to accurately do that. But I've done it, and I don't model a true prototype, but I was kind of shamed by Mike Jordan in my little layout extension in this. So who else here has got out the putty knife or the Sawzall, and after a number of operation sessions, changed it? And it kind of goes along with what I always said about if you want to have a great house, you build the house of your dreams, live in it 5 years, sell it, then go build the house that you know you want now. Has anybody, after operating the layout so many sessions, and I'm the first guy to say yes, changed anything? And Greg brought up adding crossovers. Has anybody else done that?
Yes.
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 Oh, not me.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, Mike.
So I'm in a 12-step program. Okay.
Yeah.
So,
exactly. Yes, you are.
I can't talk now. I'm underneath the bus.
The wheels on the bus go round.
Right over Mike. So, Joe, what did you change? And we'll go down the room and finish up with that. So, Joe, what did
in you Washington
change?
Avenue, there was a, you know, it's the line splits and goes to either north or to the east. We didn't have, there wasn't essentially the passing siding there. And I was adamant against it. My operating crew revolted and said, we're doing that. And they brought the tools over and tore stuff out and bent the switch and put it in there. And it's been the best thing ever.
Did you just say your operating crew was revolting?
Yes. Yes.
They revolted.
And they revolted. So both. We moved staging yards. I've talked about that. To make them bigger and work better. There have been multiple changes on the central of Minnesota, and I'm hoping I can move into a new house before we have to make more.
Larry, what did you change on yours after you've been running it for a while?
I broke a cardinal layout rule. I used a curved turnout.
Ooh.
I had a yard, a four-track yard, and I kept trying to talk myself out of curved turnouts because everybody said, oh, you know, they just look terrible and all that. I had a printout of it, and I laid it in place and realized I could get a little more space between the tracks and get another track put in just by substituting a number six for a number six curved. So I flew against convention and ripped the whole yard up and relaid it with that one turnout, and I gained like 8 cars more storage and a lot more room for switching and a caboose track. The best thing I ever did, just because your gut tells you to do it. The other one was like a crossover in my passenger area, just so that you could switch the head end power out without going through a certain double slip switch. And that one really made a lot of sense too.
All right, very good. So then we'll go to Greg. What have you done there?
Well, I had a nice long yard here, but one of the problems that I found as we operated is people would bring their train into the yard, and it's a good 20 feet to run around your train, which sounded great when we designed it. And frankly, people started getting bored. You know, they cut off their engine, they cut over to the other track, and they try to run around the whole thing. It's a 2-minute trip down to that end of the layout. That wasn't the exciting part. So we ended up putting a crossover. In fact, I had a certain master model railroader actually scratch built me one. I'm about to install it. It's actually sitting where it's supposed to be installed.
Well, that's a plus. That's a plus.
Yeah.
Well, so did you buy the razor saw he recommends so that you could cut it in properly?
I use the Dremel.
No. So, but yeah, so I'm excited to get that in and get that going. I just got to get a couple buildings built for some friends of mine.
Yeah. All right, Mike Jordan, what are we going to admit here now? What did you change physically on your layout after operating?
Running up the branch line, I kept the track close to the edge of the layout. And one of my operators said, well, if you ran the track along the back wall, which you couldn't reach, it'd make the run to the yard longer. Researching the Santa Maria, they had a tremendous amount of street running. This gave me a chance to build a flat section of the business district and then put the track right down the asphalt street. I gained a longer run and, you know, got to improve my modeling skills.
Yeah, I like that. And Mr. Hamilton, David, what did you change your tear up on the Burlington?
Well, I've taken out some crossovers. I've taken out some other turnouts just to simplify the track plan. Like in the town of Prairie du Chien, I changed the entrance into one end of my staging yard because for some obscure reason I had two tracks going in and it was always impossible to make sense of where you were going. And I took the other end of it and added some curved turnouts so I could get a little bit more staging track. So now I can stage a train that's like 17, 18 cars long, theoretically, plus the power on it. If I do anything else, it's going to be simplifying things. I mean, I can see taking out turnouts and making some site or some spurs longer as opposed to having a, you know, feeling any obligation to have a switch for every building. You know, that gets to be kind of silly after a while. So longer industry tracks, you know, fewer crossovers, you know, that sort of thing.
So the industry is going back to thinking about spots rather than switches. Yeah, that's a good thing to change.
Yep. So that's a good thing to change. I could see going forward too, even eliminating some customers. I mean, they might not like that, but say it's an economic thing.
But not maybe gruesome casket, we hope. Not that.
No, not really. But they're
and get rid of our sponsor.
Yeah.
I actually did that in one town. I had you know, one building next to another building, which was the gruesome casket building next to a Campbell kit. And I kind of combined them, you know, instead of saying this is this and this is this. Now I just picked one name and made it a bigger building because, you know, lots of times there are additions to buildings. So I eliminated a customer that way. And it made more sense. Every time I've done stuff like that, it's actually made sense to me that, you know, to eliminate stuff as opposed to adding stuff. So.
Yeah, editing. You know. Editing is a good operational thing. Dan and I talk about this as editing your layout and also asking others, what would you edit? And so we'll go to Ken. Ken, what have you taken the ye old Sawzall and putty knife and bought more flex track for?
Well, gosh, I've taken out huge sections of the layout just to make it more operationally sensible. And I think I'm at the point now where I need to do some running. I need to have some other people run. Because, you know, you get to the point where you're listening to yourself too much. And I think we've talked about this in the past. Sometimes I say, okay, I need to spend 2 weeks cleaning before I have people operate. And maybe what I need to do is say to people, you know, I'd like you to come up and operate and my workbench is a mess. And if you say anything about it, I'm going to hit you with a stick. But if you just want to come and operate, that's fine.
I'll come, but you'd have to leave the stick outside.
Yes.
I'll do that.
Is it a wood stick or is it something heavier?
Yeah. Took my Kevlar helmet from the last military assignment I had. So if I put the Kevlar on, you know you're in trouble. So, and by the way, if my wife puts Kevlar on, you know we're all in trouble. So.
Yeah. Ooh.
So, there you go.
All right, very good changes. And Kevlar aside, Dan, I know you've even made a couple changes after operating the wonderful Minnesota Commercial. What have you done?
One that's sort of a constant work in progress is because I'm dealing with a fairly small space and I'm trying to put in and get magnets working for my uncoupling, I'm always trying to cheat on having a perfectly straight area that's really long enough. And so I'm always kind of tweaking around with that to see if I can just
get those magnets to work, even though they're not in the primo location. So that's been one. But then the other one was again, as everybody else has said, adding in a crossover, because I realized that it would really improve the operation on the layout. One of my lines has a non-accurate, very short switching lead. And it always frustrated me because it wasn't realistic and I didn't enjoy it. If I added in a crossover, I could actually, in effect, make that lead much easier to switch. And I could switch, you know, a couple more cars, up to three cars at a time. That solved the problem. So I actually got the inspiration working on Will Sampson's layout for an operating session and thought, you know, I could do that myself. Got out the Sawzall, got some, ordered up a couple of Pico turnouts and popped them in there. And it works really well. Except, as Mr. Hamilton found out, if the two turnouts aren't aligned correctly, you know, you don't have power. I lose power. So I could argue it's a natural fail safe, so you don't misalign the switches, but it really was just pure accident.
That's awesome. That's awesome. All right, so I'll wrap it up here. We'll go over the key points, and then if you guys hear anything different, add to it. Track plan versus layout design. And layout design, like I said, Greg, choose that. Design for the number of people you want to have and design for time that you actually want to operate. How long do you want to stand there and run this layout? Use discipline. So define your parameters. You know, the use of negative space. I always say you can add more later. You know, if you start with the basics, we all have seen the person, you can add more. Well, this isn't enough. We're only operating this long. Let me put in that facility. And then also ask a mentor. You know, find one in the NMRA, find one in the OPSIG, find your local operating group. OPSIGs, I think, still puts out a list. Joe, I don't know if that's right, of who's in your area you could actually contact or call or something.
I believe it is.
I believe they do that. And now for, get rid of your sacred cows. If you're designing a layout, you don't have to have a passenger depot. You don't have to have the engine facility. You don't have to have, you know, the turntable and things like that. So think outside the box. Get rid of your functional fixedness. Stop designing the same plan over and over and over. And don't be afraid to change it. You have the skills. You have the time. You know, run it. And as Dave Hamilton always says, ballast is overrated. You know? Run it for 6 months or a year, and then before you grind up your track with ballast, get in there and change it. Keep your putty knife and Sawzall and constructive criticism from your operators, because they see things different than you do. I think that's all. I made most of my changes was positive feedback in a way that we got. Thank you guys. Another good show. Another good chat. And unless anyone else has anything to say or announce, we'll end it there. Are we good? Or all right, everyone.
I think you're good, Tom.
I don't know about that. But all right, everyone unmute, and we'll say good night. So thank you, everyone, for listening.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, good night, friends.
Until next time.
You've been listening to The Crossing Gate, the official podcast of the Twin Cities Division. You can find us on Facebook in our group, the Twin Cities Division of the NMRA. You can email us at tcdnmra@gmail.com. Thank you for listening, and don't forget to subscribe for future podcasts.
Yes. As long as it's got gin in it.
No, we accept you, Joe, for what you are.
Joe, we love you, and we'd give you a group hug if we were there.
Yeah. No, we wouldn't.
Buying drinks for us.
No.
Larry, no. I'm coming down tomorrow. I want a group hug. No.
There's always one.
My Ensign Morgan. Oh. My Ensign Morgan is empty.
One.
And I'm just mellow as can be.
Little soft blanc, and I'm a good boy.
Ken wants a hug, I think.
I'm not sure what Dan said, but it sounds kinky to me.
Yeah. It is kinky. Yeah, I think it sounds
right.
Kinky. Thank you. Tom doesn't publish the after show.
Believe it or not,
it's just not the after show's on Patreon.
The after hours show is over at Moe's. Come on,
it's $100 a month on Patreon.
That's right.